Accountability is really doing what you say you're going to do. It's keeping the promises that you make to yourself.
Antonio.
Best-selling author, motivational speaker, create the life you want.
It's the decisions that you make every single day when no one is watching. When no one is watching, that's going to determine your success or failure in life. Instability growing up, I found that as I began my career, and I think interestingly in relationships where they showed up, whenever things got really, really good, that's when I would leave. I don't consider myself a consultant, I'm a coach. I ask questions. Very rarely will I tell someone what to do, but I love to ask questions and I love to ask myself questions. And a question someone asked for me a long time ago that really stopped me in my tracks, and this will stop everyone in their tracks if they're willing to listen to it and process it, is,
hello there, welcome to the Happy Habit Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew. If you're new around here, I like to talk health, well-being, self-improvement, motivation, and all of that good stuff every Monday and Thursday. I've been doing so for almost 4 years, 375 episodes, and really an awful lot of value in the can already. So if you want to check out the archive, feel free to do so. Welcome, by the way, to all the new subscribers. There's always an uptick in people subscribing at the start of a calendar year, which is great to see. This year is no different. And if you're getting value from this series, please do like, please do share, subscribe if you've not already done so, and leave the podcast a positive review, be it 3, 4, 5 stars. Whatever you think I have earned would be absolutely great, because it certainly does help to spread the message of what I'm trying to do in this podcast space. A reminder, we are on YouTube and on Instagram now if you want to check out the videos of these podcast episodes too. Now, in this episode, I'm joined by Antonio Nebs. He is a life coach, keynote speaker, and the author of Stop Living on Autopilot, Take Responsibility for Your Life and Rediscover a Bolder, Happier You. In this episode, we hear about Antonio's view of accountability in life. We discover how his chaotic childhood, which involved 6 parental divorces and 15 different homes, informed his outlook on life today. Expect to hear about how successful people have a tendency to take their foot off the gas once they've reached a threshold of success in their life. We also hear one of Antonio's mantras, how playing to win is different from playing not to lose. Discover why it is important to remember that life owes you nothing and that your success and failure is on you. And very importantly, you do not have to live life alone.
Can I congratulate you on the book? Let me give it a mention. It's called Stop Living on Autopilot, Take Responsibility for Your Life and Rediscover a Bolder, Happier You. This is a raw book. It's a no-nonsense book. And I was reminded of David Goggins' book, actually, when I was reading it. He's another man who believes in a no-nonsense approach. And both of you have the same philosophy, especially when it comes to accountability. Can you talk to me about how you view accountability in life?
Yeah, well, anytime I'm mentioned with David Goggins in the same sentence, it blows me away. Obviously, we come from different approaches, and I have utmost respect for his background and what he does. You know, I just come from an interesting background where I'm a firm believer that we need to tell people the truth. More than anything, we owe it to ourselves to tell people the truth and for us to tell ourselves the truth. I think few and few people nowadays need a pat on the back. They need someone to look them square in the eyes and tell them what's up. I know at least I did. And for me, as I think about accountability, it's really doing what you say you're going to do. It's keeping the promises that you make to yourself. It's doing those things that you're supposed to do without expecting a pat on the back that society has, with social media and these different tools, has given us an expectation to expect certain things. So when I think about accountability, it's doing what you say you're going to do, and not for anyone else, but for end of the day, for you and the person that you look at in the mirror every single day. Because we can get deeper in this if you want. There were some times when I didn't keep accountability for myself, and that turned me down a road. A lot of what I share in the book, Stop Living on Autopilot, that I didn't like. And at the end of the day, yeah, you can go see therapists, you can get support, you can get on medication, you can hire a coach, And at the end of the day, it's the decisions that you make every single day when no one is watching. When no one is watching, that's going to determine your success or failure in life.
I know you had a trying upbringing. I think you moved something like 15 times between both of your parents. I think there were 6 divorces, and condolences. I know your father passed away earlier on this year. Can I ask you how that informed your approach to life today?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you for those condolences. To be clear, they didn't marry and divorce each other 6 times. That would have been, you talk about commitment. That would have been a commitment gone wrong. That affected me when life started going really, really good. You know, you may be familiar with Gay Hendricks in the book, The Upper Leap, and the Upper Limit Problem. And the Upper Limit Problem basically postulates that we all kind of have this internal thermostat that we're set at, that we're born at based on experiences, et cetera. And if we exceed that, let's say, for example, you experience more joy, more happiness, you experience more career success, you experience more wealth, you name it. We try to find a way to bring ourselves back down to what's normal. So when I experienced those divorces and all of that, what's the word I want to use? Instability growing up, I found that as I began my career, and I think interestingly in relationships where they showed up, whenever things got really, really good, that's when I would leave, because I wanted to leave before the rug got pulled from underneath me. Right when the career, I had a television career for a really, really long time in New York City as a reporter, correspondent. I was a guy on TV every single day, most days. I can look back and see that as I was making certain success, making certain steps up the ladder, I saw some self-sabotaging happen because I didn't know how at the time how to process that and how to handle that. So when I think about that instability growing up, it took me many years to acknowledge it. It led to that upper limit problem. And when things got good, that's when I would say, hey, you know what? You're an amazing woman. I should get out of here.
Oh, I've done that a couple of times myself and kicked myself after it. It's amazing the tendency people have to self-sabotage because they don't want to move to the unfamiliar space of success and of contentment. They're more familiar with being dissatisfied and being miserable and unhappy. And they go back there. They go back there every time.
Yeah, that's normal for a lot of people. That's their standard day in the life. And for me, that was my standard day in the life. And it's to the point when you realize enough is enough and you have to ask yourself a question. You know, the work that I do, I don't consider myself a consultant. I'm a coach. I ask questions. Very rarely will I tell someone what to do, but I love to ask questions and I love to ask myself questions. And a question someone asked for me a long time ago that really stopped me in my tracks, and this will stop everyone in their tracks if they're willing to listen to it and process it, is, how good are you willing to feel? How good are you willing to feel? And the truth is, when I was asked that question, probably for the first time 15 years ago, based on my actions, based on where I was not willing to feel good at that time, because I can look at my behaviors and my patterns and how I showed up that said that you have a limit, you have a threshold of how good you're willing to feel. And, you know, it took me through a lot of years of work, and I write about this and stop living on autopilot, but I still remember someone telling me very clearly, they said, your success and your happiness hurts no one. And when they said that to me, that was like a big exhale for me. Your success and your happiness hurts no one. Because I think for a lot of time, I operated as if, as I succeeded, as I found success, monetary, happiness, relationships, you name it, somehow that hurt other people. But of course, as you probably know, with time and life, you realize that's not the case. We're all on our own journeys. We all have our work to do. It doesn't mean that as we're in the pursuit of happiness, in the pursuit of success, of joy, you name it, that things are always going to be easy. They're not. But it's that commitment to believing, I believe that the best is ahead. And I find that when we believe and we work that the best is ahead, things change for the better, like immediately, even in the midst of trying circumstances.
Talk to me about this mantra of yours, to play to win as opposed to play not to lose.
Ooh, that's a good one right there. So, I mean, are you a sports fan yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What's your sport of choice?
Oh, well, I like soccer, or football, as we call it in this side of the Atlantic. Rugby,
okay, here we
which
go.
Is not too dissimilar to American football. It's just no padding and lots of other sports.
Let's talk football. Let's talk sure. What we call soccer here in the United States. So imagine watching your favorite team. They're playing, and at halftime, they're winning 3-0. And you're like, okay, all right, boys, we got this. We're up 3-0. We are kicking butt. Who knows? We're going to get the point that we need, and maybe we'll win this game 6-0, blah, blah, blah. But then something happens. It's stoppage time. And they're like 6 minutes left of stoppage time. And you are up 3-0 at halftime. And now all of a sudden, it's stoppage time, and the score is 3-3. And the opposing team has the ball on the attack. What happened? In the first half, that team, your team, they came out playing to win. In the second half, that team came out playing not to lose. There are two different approaches to life when we come out playing to win and we come out playing not to lose. I coach a lot of amazing executives, and these are talented men and women with titles like director and vice president. And it's amazing. So they ascend the corporate ladder. They get these big titles and raises, responsibilities. And then what's amazing is all the things that they did to get that job, to get that promotion, to get that bonus. Guess what? Once they land in the job, they stop doing those things. They start holding on for dear life. It's like they're trying to hold on to it instead of breathe into it and allow it to live and allow it to be. They stop doing all the things that got them there. The same way that football teams stop playing aggressively, taking risk, having trust and confidence in themselves, the way they practice, they stop doing those things and they hold on for dear life. And so that's kind of like the upper limit problem. I've done that before in my life as well, where I've taken my foot off of the pedal, forgetting that I have multiple gears that I should can shift. So it's a question I love to ask people when they evaluate their life, when they look at something like their marriage, when they look at parenting, when they look at their career, when they look at their health and fitness. Are they still playing to win, or are they playing not to lose, in cruise control, right? And in my experience, once you shift to playing not to lose, that's a whole other person that shows up, and we got to have a conversation with that man or woman.
And cruise control is another way of saying autopilot again.
Absolutely. I think another way to look at cruise control is this. So I live in Southern California in the Los Angeles area. And so we see a lot of amazing sports cars, Lamborghinis, Ferraris, Bugattis, all these amazing sports cars. We drive a sexy minivan. So I don't want any of your listeners to be jealous. But just imagine for a moment owning a Ferrari, whether you like fine Italian engineering or not. But imagine owning a Ferrari, this vehicle that's built for speed, that's made to go, that can go over 200 miles per hour. And I don't know what the math is kilometers wise, forgive me. But imagine owning that vehicle and only driving it at 35 miles per hour. That's not what that thing is built for. And unfortunately, what I found, and again, this isn't me saying I'm speaking from the top of a mountain knowing better. I'm speaking from personal experience as well, and from the coaching that I've done with men and women over the past 10 years in corporate America, internationally and beyond. You see a lot of amazing women and men who are so talented, who are so equipped, but they are in cruise control. They're driving that Ferrari at 35 miles per hour, and they forget that they have many gears that they can shift into. But here's what happens. And I don't know what happens over there, but a lot of times what happens is we get a little bit older and we get these different responsibilities and different things. And we kind of stop, remember who we forget about who we once were. We stop shifting those gears. Let me tell you just a quick story. There's an interview in the New York Times back in 2016, and two business owners, they were co-founders of a business, were being interviewed. And they were talking about what it was like to live and work in New York City in the 1980s and 1990s, when New York City was very different than it is today. And at some point, one of the business owners in the interview said, I miss the old New York. He was reminiscing about what New York was like in the 1990s. But then his business partner corrected him. He said, you don't miss the old New York. What you miss is the old you. And how you showed up during that time, that enthusiasm, that optimism, that ambition, some of that risk-taking that you had in you. So just for those people listening right now, I just ask them to think about when is the last time they were about to do something that caused their heart rate to increase some, or made their hand shake a little bit, or maybe caused them to get butterflies or get that sweaty upper lip. I'm not talking about those crazy big things like quitting your job or moving to another country or filing divorce papers, but pressing publish on that blog post, pressing send on that email, raising your hand in a staff meeting and making a suggestion or making a point. And I can give endless examples, but I think when we stop doing that, that's when the knife starts to get dull. That's the best way I can think about it.
The book has got so many great lines and so many great pieces of advice. No one owes you anything, for example. You owe yourself everything. And yet we get so hung up on this, and we get so angry, excuse me, with people and with life when we think life owes us something. How do we stop ourselves falling into this trap of being bitter towards people for opportunities not given to us, for example, or get bitter? How do we stop ourselves getting bitter towards life?
Yeah, well, one, I think the opportunity we have first and foremost, and this is the hard part right here, is being willing to point the finger at ourselves. In society nowadays, you know, we point the finger at everyone else, but very rarely are we willing to point the finger at ourselves and ask this pivotal, powerful question: what role have I played in this? I saw something the other day. It said that when you're 18 years old, you know, most of your challenges and problems you can blame your parents on, but when you're 38 years old, everything is your problem. That's based on the decisions that you have made up to that point in your life. I found the best way to not get bitter, to not to be a complainer, to take accountability, is to not to go about life alone. As you probably know, at least in the States, we're talking about this a lot. There's a loneliness epidemic, specifically as it relates to men. And they don't have a lot of mates that they're spending time with, unfortunately. And I find that isolation, first and foremost, is a big enemy to so many people. And in my experience, no one who has accomplished anything of significance did it alone, and neither should you. So my suggestion to everyone is either one, sometimes you have to write a check, like hand over money to someone and work with a coach, work with a therapist, join a group coaching program to get some support, to see where your blinders are. At other times, you can do something that I do every Thursday. I'm part of a community called Man Morning. We have an international global newsletter called Man Morning. And we get together every week for an hour. We go for a walk and talk, a group of guys. And we do something very interesting in this walk and talk. We start with two questions. The first question is, what are you celebrating? We all go around and we briefly share what we're celebrating. And that's really key and important, because I can't tell you how many people in my experience very rarely, if ever, share wins, big or small, personally or professionally, out loud, right? That's just rare. So it's just good to hear what other people are sharing and being able to share also what you're celebrating. But then we also share, what are you navigating? And let's be clear, we say, what are you navigating? We don't say, what are you complaining about this week? Two different things. What are you navigating? And then we also get to share some of those things. And the awesome thing about that is that you realize you're not the first person or the only person experiencing something. Other people are going through challenging times. And so meeting with a men's group or a women's group or a church group, there's so many different types of groups like this exist, is awesome to start taking some of that accountability. Lastly, I'll say, in terms of like to limit the complaining, is I want people to have more things on the calendar that they're looking forward to. I find that a lot of individuals that are struggling, going through challenging times, and these could be individuals, by the way, that on the surface, they've checked off every box that society said they should check off: education, job, income, family, house, all those things that say you're supposed to be successful, you're supposed to be happy. But one thing a lot of these folks don't have is something on the calendar to look forward to. I know that may sound trivial or simple, but that a weekend getaway. Let's go ahead and plan that vacation for next year in advance. Let's look at the calendar for this quarter and see what concerts or what comedy shows are coming to town that we can put on the calendar. If you have children, planning those events in advance. I find that going with the flow is cool. And sometimes having those things on the calendar that give you something to look forward to, that they can play a really positive role in how we show up on a day to day.
You mentioned loneliness and it being an epidemic now in the Western world and probably all over the world at this stage. And you talked about your newsletter and your getting together with other men on a Thursday, the Man Morning. Can we talk about that shared experience and that collegiality and that sense of a tribe and sharing life's woes and trials and tribulations then. And then can we talk then and set that against that the mantra and this quote that Mel Robbins is famous for, that nobody is coming to save you? Can we square one against the other?
I think we can. Well, first, I'm a big Mel Robbins fan. I've been a fan of her work for a really, really long time. Again, no one's coming to save you. No one owes you anything, but you owe yourself everything. I think those things are very alike. And in the midst of no one is coming to save you, no one owes you anything, you owe yourself everything, it is still our responsibility to do all we can in this life to not go about it alone. I've learned that, you know, my challenges and tribulations, a lot of them have one thing in common, and that is that I've isolated and that I've retreated. There's a portion of my book of Stop Living on Autopilot when I talked about where, according to the internet, I was living my best life ever. I was checking off all those boxes, but behind the scenes, I was struggling and I was starting to retreat. I was starting to isolate from family and friends. And what I find is that even though at the end of the day, the decisions that I make, the choices that I make are up to me, it'd be such a waste of life to go about things on our own and solely reading blogs and solely reading newsletters and solely reading books and not getting that human touch. Because again, when I talk to these men in my man morning group and in the different chapters that have started across the globe, no one there is saving them. No one there is writing checks to help out any financial woes. One thing we don't do in those things is give out direct advice. But one thing we do is we do positive, you know, we hear the negative attributes of positive, excuse me, of peer pressure. We like to say there's something called positive peer pressure. You know, in society nowadays, we're really good at calling people out. One thing that we do in Man Morning is that we call each other up to be the best version of ourselves, to ask some tough questions. Again, there's not a lot of telling going on in these groups. In the coaching that I do, I don't do telling. I don't make statements very rarely. And that's I'm reflecting back to someone. If I turn into a consultant, I say client X, client Y, I put on my consultant hat. But in the Man Morning in the group, we ask really pointed questions. And those are the ones that can call you up and get you again to take accountability for your experience. So I guess I'll summarize by saying no one is coming to save you. No one owes you anything. You owe yourself everything. As powerful and as direct as those are, and yeah, it's a great tweet, it's a great line in a book. I used it, of course. It tells a story. It doesn't tell the whole story. But guess what? Here's what I forgot to find. I should mention, you know, I find the more that we bet on ourselves, the more that we invest in ourselves, more people tend to show up wanting to help. You know, they see you're doing the work. People tend to show up and they're willing to help you when you're doing something. So I hope that answers your question. That was a brilliant one.
Halfway through the book, you write a chapter called What Do You Want? I'm wondering, why is it that an awful lot of people don't know what they want? Or is it a case that they do know what they want, they're just afraid to go for it?
I think it's a combination of both, but I think it's more of the latter. We're afraid to go for exactly what we want. You know, that's one of the things that I do in a lot of my coaching sessions, especially when I get started. You know, most people who come to me, they come to me with what I call the leaf on the tree. You know, they're having job problems. They're doing a career transition. Some people are dealing with some relationship stuff, though I'm not a marital counselor. And sometimes what I'll do is they're telling the story of this and that. I'll just jump right in to stop the story and say, what do you want? What's the outcome that you want? What is the outcome that you desire? And you would be amazed. You probably wouldn't, but a lot of people would be amazed and surprised how many people cannot answer that question because they haven't really thought about it. They don't know. Or to your point, many people are afraid to pursue what they want to pursue. You know, look, it's no wonder. I meet so many people. Here's a profile of many of my clients. These are a man and a woman. Let's say they're 43 years old. They've checked off all the boxes society said they should check off. They shouldn't. The society says they should not complain, that they're doing good. But at some point, as they checked off the boxes of their education, getting the good job everybody talks about, setting up the pension, all that fun stuff, at some point, they never really paused and asked themselves, this is great, but is this what I want? Is this what I want to pursue? So then all of a sudden, what happens? They're 42, 45, 48 years old, still young, in my opinion, maybe 50s as well. But not only are they now they're saying, is this what I want? Then they look over and they see a husband or a wife, and they see kids, and they see a house and a mortgage and different responsibilities. So they feel a little bit overwhelmed. And so they feel a little bit of regret for not going after what they want. I know I'm going a lot of different directions here. And I do believe it's a lot of people not pursuing what they actually wanted to pursue. It goes back to playing not to lose, as opposed to playing to win. Lastly, I'll say, when I was in grad school, a professor said something to me. I had a lot of different options when I was coming out of graduate school, and I was a bit overwhelmed by them. The same way I think a lot of people now are overwhelmed by all the different things they can do, apparently, because the internet says you can do anything. Watch a 30-minute YouTube video and you too can start doing this. But he said, you can do anything you want, but you can't do everything. You can do anything you want, but you can't do everything, which now makes me think about the great Jim Collins quote, who wrote the book Good to Great. He said, if you have more than three priorities, then you don't have any. So I'm all about this. When I meet people and they tell me they're stuck or they're in a funk, or you've probably met many people who've been figuring things out for a really, really long time. In my book, in my experience, that means one thing. That means that you have a decision to make. You have a decision to make. And by the way, again, I'm not inviting people to do drastic things like quit their jobs and move to new countries. If you're like, want to pursue a new profession, great. Do I advise you quit your job immediately and start a new business? No. But if you have a standard 9 to 5, how about working on what your new interest in your 5 to 9 in the evenings at home, or in the weekends, or signing up for that course, or working with that coach to explore this? What's the smallest step that you can take to explore this and see how that pans out? And then you'll make momentum and progress from there.
I am obsessed with the concept of overcoming failure. If I had the opportunity to talk to the most successful people in history, I wouldn't talk to these people about their successes. I would talk to them about the darkest of moments, whenever they doubted themselves and when they didn't have any attention from the world and they had to overcome the difficulties and the trials of failure. I'm just wondering, because you're somebody who espouses the significance of mindset mastery, what advice would you have for people out there who, in order to help them deal with those moments when they're doubting themselves and when they're having to overcome a failure in order to progress and move forward?
Yeah, I've experienced a good amount of failure in my life, if you want to categorize it as failure. I like to remind people of that again, that the internet tells a story. It can never tell the whole story. So I don't want anyone here to be confused about what you read about people on the internet, what you see on Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn. You're getting a story. You're not getting the whole story. Most people don't sell their failures. They don't tell those stories. They tell the ones of success, but there's a lot behind those. I would invite people, I don't know why we don't do this enough, but I would invite people to look at life as a laboratory. And you have background, you know, in science, so you'd appreciate this, but I find that when you look at life as an experiment, as a laboratory, it gives us a lot more leeway. It gives us a lot more flexibility for everything not to work. I'm not a scientist, but I can't imagine scientists who are trying to solve amazing challenges, how many quote unquote failures that they hit. But I also wonder if they even look at it as a failure, or if they just look at it, okay, I tried that, but we're in this is an experiment. We're in a laboratory. That's what we're supposed to do. So let's try the next one. You know, so that's what I invite people to do, is how can you look at this as an experiment and look at it as a test, and then learn from that test so we can improve and so we can get better. And I get it. Some people have bigger hardships, bigger failures than others, and whether money's involved, whether careers are involved, whether relationships come to an end. I'm a firm believer that since we woke up today, that the best can still be ahead. I'm a firm believer that as I write and stop living on autopilot, that no matter where you stand today, your story isn't over yet, you know, because we're still writing it right now. And I think that when we kind of take the reins back and we take control and we're willing to point the finger at ourselves, we can spark some new changes and things look better in our life and use those failures as a catalyst for our life, for our growth, as opposed to as a crutch that we just lean on and continue to tell those stories about what happened 12 years ago. I'm sorry to say this, but nobody wants to hear what happened to you 12 years ago, right? Because when you meet up with your buds for the holidays and you're still talking about, they just would have put me in the game, you know, or I should have got that, you know, we got to move forward. So I would say look at life as an adventure, as a laboratory, and don't be so hard on yourself.
Your Twitter feed is gold. I have to suggest that people go to it. Even the other day, you tweeted this, a counterintuitive way to create momentum, do less than you're capable of. So 15 minutes a day over a week is almost 2 hours. 15 minutes a day over a month is nearly 8 hours. I love the idea of doing things in bite-sized chunks. It kind of feeds into that notion that Stephen Bartlett talks about, improving by 1% every single day. Bite-sized chunks.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. You know, while we're recording this, you know, New Year's isn't extremely far away. And of course, a lot of folks are going to do New Year's resolutions. And you know, he'll hear people say wild things like, oh, I'm going to work out every single day. And my response is, no, you're not. You're not going to work. You're telling me you're going to go from not working out at all to working out every single day? No, you're not. How about you give yourself a little bit of slack? And instead of working out every single day, do less than you're capable of and say, you know what? I'm going to go to the gym for 3 times this week for 30 minutes. And guess what? If you end up going more, great. But I just want you to check off those three. You may say with your spouse, we're going to do date night every week now. You know, if you have young kids, different responsibilities, maybe that's not going to work. So how about every other week you choose that date night or date days, as my wife and I have been doing, where we find that in the evenings, we're just fatigued with kids and life. So we try to sneak out for lunch or something, or a hike during the day. And for those people that, there are so many people, as you know, that want to write books. I've written 4 of them. And I can tell you, you know, that whole thing, I'm going to write all this weekend, you know, to the point, to that tweet. If you just schedule 15 minutes a day, every single day, that adds up over time. Typically that 15 minutes, you're going to get in the zone. The flow is going to extend to 20 minutes, 30 minutes some days, but set that timer, do less than you're capable of, and that will build up some momentum so you can become the type of person that writes, the type of person that works out, the type of person that eats healthily, the type of person that does date afternoon nights with your spouse and beyond.
Such wisdom. Antonio, if people want to find out more about you and your books, where can they go?
Head on over to theantonioneves.com. That's the HQ for everything. If you want to learn more about the Man Morning movement, head on over to manmorning.com.
Great stuff. And I'll stick a link to both of those in the show notes for this episode. Antonio, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for listening to this episode of the Happy Habit Podcast. A reminder to like, subscribe, share, and do leave the podcast a positive review if you feel that I have earned it. Until next time, though, stay happy.